Welcome to the Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District meeting on this Tuesday, the 21st of August, 2018, at 3 o'clock. We have a full quorum today. We also have Carrie and Roy, and we also have Blake Hamilton here, our representation. There is no public. We're inviting the public to speak. We're meeting right now down on the first floor of the Weber Building in the Commission Overflow Chambers. No public is here, and I don't have any text or any kind of a note that they were in another location by mistake. And the fact that we're 5 minutes after the hour gives me good confidence to move forward on that. So I'd like to move to item C on our agenda, which is approval of consent items. The first one is a request for approval of district bills to be paid. Warrants 428 through and including 457 in the amount of $63,655.43. And item two is a request for approval of the minutes for the meeting held on June 19th, 2018. Trustees, are there any questions on one or two of item C? None being heard, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent items.
Thank you, Gary. Trustee Erding, is there a second? Second. Is there a second?
Second.
I thought Bob already seconded.
Okay, great. Thank you, Trustee Barron, for the second. If there's no more discussion and none being recognized, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those bills to be paid and the minutes are now approved. Thank you. Mr. Hamilton.
Yes.
Update on the statute of limitations, please.
Okay, so we discussed this last time, and I put together an email and sent it to Carrie and Roy, talking about the fact that there is, because the Property Tax Act treats political subdivision liens as defined under Utah Code Annotated 1160-102-5, like a property tax pursuant to 1160-103-3A, there is no statute of limitations for collecting unpaid fees or assessments. And so that was kind of my conclusion after being asked to look at that by both Roy and Carrie. And so I provided that information to them. And they also asked me to provide some information regarding securing professional services as a district and how you can go about doing that. So I guess the discussion was about potentially securing the use of an engineer, and so I've let them know with respect to that. It's really just governed by the procurement policy and will depend on whether the district intends to go through a selection process or not, so kind of outlined that for them as well. They also asked me just the other day, do you want me to get in that now, the potential issue with respect to the impact fees and
that's got that down just a little bit further.
Yeah, that's a little further down on the agenda. Let's bring that up at that time when it's
perfect.
When it's there. Anything else on your update?
Nothing else on that update.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Great. Trustees, any questions for Mr. Hamilton? Terrific. Mr. Watts, item number E on our agenda is the manager's report.
So just want to report on how we're doing on the wells. The Cobave well, they've reached the, they call it the Langston Formation, where they feel the water is perched. They're going to drill into that to at least one length of a drill rod and just make sure that they are through and there's no other strange formation down there. But with that, then they're ready to prepare to start doing their purging or however they're going to do it, pump testing or their testing on the well. But anyway, so we're excited to know there is some water down there, and we're at that point at about 1,100 feet is where they're at right now. So I was excited about it, and then the more information will be coming as they begin to start testing that, and I guess they're going to use an air source, and it actually will force air into the well, and that will push some of the water back up. But anyway, it looks good. It took a little longer we thought to get down because they've had some problems with the drilling rig, but it was good. That's all done, and then again, more information will come on that in the near future on how much production we get on it, but they'll start that test now.
Great. Roy, pardon my ignorance, but is there any reason to just stop there? I mean, when you identify water, wouldn't you just want to go deeper if possible, given the possibility of sort of less snowpack, less water, deeper aquifer? I mean, do you stop necessarily right when you find the water?
It's based on that formation, Bob. Talking with Scott and Don from Barnett Services, Barnett Consulting, the reason they did stop there is because that particular formation is almost impermeable, and everything they've ever tested or done, that's where the water will perch, is there. And so going into that for another 500 feet or whatever, you won't find anything else. So they're claiming that's it. That's as deep as water is going to go. It'll run, and he said based on the spring that's down further down the mountain, it's coming out that same formation. So he said that means that the water is hitting that formation, and then it's coming out in that big spring down on the highway. So that's why they suggested we stop at this point.
So there's no way it's going to go. We can go deeper, but there's no way. It's highly, highly improbable that by going deeper that we'll have any more or less water than what we already have hit.
Yeah, so that's why that's right. And that's why they'll probably just go down another 20 feet or so, check it and make sure that we haven't just hit some small piece of that Langston formation. Maybe there's something below it, but they'll verify that with the next length. And then after that, they'll make a determination.
Does that answer your question, Trustee Barrett?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, great. Super. Any more discussion on that? Roy, do you have any more on that?
Yeah, I'll just mention also on the Bloomington well. Of course, we did our pump test. The Laughlin came back with their report that the well will produce, in their mind, a safe yield of 200 gallons a minute. We're going to meet with them on Thursday. Mark, are you going to be in that meeting?
Yep.
So we'll meet with Don and Mark and Laughlin Group, Paul, I think Rick Everson, and probably Ann Winston. Mm-hmm. And the idea, will, of course, we'll look at the report from the Laughlin Engineering on the well production and all the information to make some determination to make sure that what they're saying is correct and that we have that safe yield looks good. We'll also consider the getting ready for the permit and take one final look at the well house. We feel like we've got all the issues resolved on it and they're ready to determine when they're going to build that. But the district, of course, will be the one that will have to submit the permits and the requests for all that. But anyway, in our meetings, we're very, very comfortable with the pump house. It looks good. It addressed all of our issues. And we've changed the positioning of the building a little bit up there from where it was, but that's really minor. But we feel like that should work okay. And we feel like we're ready to move ahead and get the well house built. So,
okay.
So that's where that's at now.
We've got updates on both those things. I know that Trustee Barrett and others have been really involved in this. Does that answer any questions you've had in the past with regards to either one of those wells, both Cobabe or Bloomington? Bob?
Well, you know, as it relates, you know, Cobabe is our well, our data. We live and breathe with our own analysis of our own data. Bloomington is data that's being generated by the developer's engineer. So I think we just need to, and this is a redundant comment, certainly, is we just need to make sure that we're truly comfortable with the duration of their testing and the veracity of the information. Because once we put together an operating permit and ultimately take physical ownership of those facilities, we own that. And if that output falls short in any way,
it's on us.
Yeah.
So do you have a suggestion on that?
Oh, guess not.
Bob, are you still there? It might be that he got disconnected.
You there, Bob? Gary, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, just lost Bob, I guess. Well, I just might mention, to have one more set of eyes on that, of course, I had Paul Hurst checking with the as they were testing the well. And then also ask Don Barnett's guys to go up and check on everything that was happening and verifying what they were doing and the quantities of the gallons per minute being pumped. And they were comfortable with it. They felt that everything was legitimate and everything that Laughlin's saying is correct. So at that point, all we can go on is based on the numbers and what was said. Everybody's verified it.
I don't know what else we can do, Roy. Do you
Yeah,
know?
In the end, it really will come down to this, is about two or three things. Of course, we have the other wells that'll be up there, and we'll have three of them that'll be working. To whatever extent they'll be able to produce, whether it's a lot or less or whatever, we'll manage those and make sure there's water for the people on Powder West, and as well as there's water all up in the upper system. And beyond that, we will also probably help to manage the water right and the Kolbabe well. If for some reason we get out of priority, we'll make sure that we have water probably coming from the other wells that'll help to offset that, maybe shut it down for a period of time, maybe pump it heavier during the winter time or something else. So we'll try and utilize all those sources. The other thing is the very thing that I think Mark's brought up several times, and so is the developers, is the fact that the per capita quantity that's required for a resort community, it's way less than we're being required to live by. Could be possibly even half. So if the adjustment has to be made, it'll probably be a per capita reduction. And so there probably will be enough, no matter what.
Trustee Barrett, we just heard a beep. Is that you? Back? I sent him a note. To tell them we can't hear him. So, okay.
So, how do you think, Mark? You've probably dealt with as much as anything. I don't know any other way to get cases on that. I think we'll be fine. I really think the big issue in the future will be managing the aquifer and the sources and keeping the tanks fresh. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge we're going to face. Not water supply. I think it's going to be managing what we have.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that due to the nature of our, really extreme peaks and off-peak periods, mm-hmm. worst case scenario, we could look at adding additional storage if we see that we ever come up short. But I think due to the fact that we're basically double what we're seeing in terms of requirements by the state versus actual usage, I don't think we're ever going to run up against an issue unless there's just a, prolonged drought that I think we're going to have other problems besides mm-hmm. that. So.
That's what I think. I think the important thing is fire protection, making sure, like you said, there's reservoirs that are adequate and the line sizes are adequate so that we have the flows we need in case there's a fire in somebody's place. But I think we'll be okay as far as supply goes, always in the future.
So how does it work with the state? So right now, pump is X and the number of units we're going to approve is Y. If somehow we have less water, to Mark's point, I don't, we're going to use like no water up there. Mm-hmm. But what does the state do if the well falls behind, 200 gallons per minute or wherever we're certifying it for? Do they require you to get a new well, or do they just say, or do they not step in until something else happens?
Yeah, I think that I don't think they'd step in. Again, that's part of the engineering that has to be done correctly. And storage is probably the biggest problem. You can pump a small stream into a tank and keep up with demand pretty easily. It's like the Kolbabe well, the Pizzle Springs, is what, almost 8 million gallons has come out of those two little tiny 3/4 inch meters. And so it's enough water would have taken care of the district's needs many times over out of just those springs, those two little springs that are running. So that tells me that there's plenty of water. It's storage okay. will be the real issue.
So okay. some water companies, mm-hmm. I don't know if they're districts, but most likely they are, they have water storage like Pineview mm-hmm. or like Willard Bay. Mm-hmm. They have a huge amount of storage. And some of them are trading that water storage by seeping into other aquifers. So they're giving away water to one to add to another aquifer for another one for another day. They're using this, they're storing their water underground.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Remember we talked mm-hmm. about this, yeah. The Weber Basin's doing that very thing. So is that a possibility that we could But how do we do that? I mean, that might be something to look into, to store our excess water underground. So if we do have something extra, then we have another additional storage somewhere else in an aquifer that doesn't evaporate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good thought. I think the interesting thing about Pizzle Springs, if there's a chance still that we can use that along with our other water rights, God, it seems like that ought to be, we ought to try and get a tank at that area.
The problem there is surface contamination.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if there's a way of treating it. It's a good source. We'd have to do something to make sure it maintain the quality of it, but it's a source of water. It's a lot of water.
It is a lot of water.
Whether we use it for mitigation, dump it back in the stream, I don't know.
My question was, can we use that to mitigate against our requirements with Wolf Creek?
I talked with Don's guy, Scott, and he seemed to think we can. I'm not sure actually how they would make that work, whether we have to put it into a tank saying we were using it, we're keeping it here, and then we release it at certain times or something. But he's gonna look into it for us. I talked to him about that last week. The other thing that we have is the water right that's on the Cache Valley side. There's a water right.
I'm on back now, guys.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Bob had mentioned this several times and wanted me to look into it, so I did. And then talking with the hydrologist, he said, oh yeah, it's a great water right on the Cache Valley side at 200 acre feet, and possibly could be used for the snow making or just whatever, but it's 200 acre feet of water that could be used for some other purposes on that side of the mountain, of course. But anyway, yeah, I think every drop we get, find a way to use it, store it, whatever, on top of the mountain, and it's always a value. Somehow, always a value.
So, Trustee Barrett, recognizing that you have had some, or this phone's had some issues, we've been talking about the very thing that you brought up, and that's the certification of Bloomington and Kobe. We've talked about water storage. I don't know what you were able to hear and what you weren't able to hear. Do you have any other questions pertaining to that?
No, I just, we're going to own this, all these wells, and we need to make sure that they are verifiable. That's just the long and the short of it. It's not that I don't have trust or confidence in the developer's data. I just want to make sure that we keep an open eye in terms of that we're ultimately going to own these wells.
Okay. Great. Trustees, any other questions? And that's well noted. Thank you. Well noted. Okay, let's move on then, Roy. Go ahead.
Okay, so as I mentioned the last meeting, we were been working on the sewer system, on the easements, on the sewer lines. We've been running cameras in throughout the sewer systems to make sure that everything's clean and they're functioning okay. We've completed the cleaning and videoing of the Sheep Creek area. And we found a couple places.
All the roads are, because a lot of people come to ask me about that.
Yeah, those are sewer lateral locations.
That's what I figured.
So we're going to have the engineer start GPSing all those, so we have a GPS location for all the laterals for future needs. And also, we've gone through those, of course, to find a few bellies in the sewer system. They settle over time. And then we've also flushed the lines out, cleaned them so they're all functional, and cleaned out all of the lift stations. So get it up as best and as good a quality as we can so we know it's safe and running well. So we've been doing that, but we're also, over time, we've been doing the surveying, all of the easements, all of the, and established those. We've also been checking all the manholes. They're all GPS now. We've been popping lids, checking elevations inside of the pipes. We're actually starting to come down the mountain now. We actually GPSed everything up on top, and then we're coming down the mountain now, starting at the, what they call the grinder station there by Sundown Lodge. And then we're going to have to uncover each one of those manholes. A lot of them are 2 to 3 feet under the dirt. They're really unusual.
Wow.
And then you have vent pipes. You'll see the pipes going down the roads. They're coming out of the ground. Well, they put a pipe in top of each of the manhole lids for the vent, and then just cover it up with dirt rather than putting a full-sized cone on it.
Instead of building it up like they should.
Yeah, it saves a little money, I guess. And most of the pipe going down the mountainside is cast iron, which surprised me. It's cement till it gets to the little grinder station, then it's cast iron all the way down.
How's the integrity? I know there's a lot of infiltration, groundwater infiltration into that?
Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. As I've looked at what's going in at the top compared to what's coming out the bottom, and it's pretty much the same. So our infiltration is good. We don't have a lot. We do during the wintertime, the spring, when there's snow melt, we have a lot. But we're starting to identify those places, and we'll start to fix them. And there's a couple that we'll probably go over in tomorrow's meeting as we meet with Summit about the infrastructure. There's some areas where the infrastructure's is all sitting down 6 or 8 inches below the ground and the road, and the water's just pouring into it, and land drains are dumping into it. We'll fix those. But as far as the rest of the infrastructure, we're going to go down the mountain, check. We're going to video all of the sewer manholes and all the way down, and then we'll go all the way across that open land, what they even call it, so over to the preserve area. So try and get those done in the next few weeks also. And so what I'm requesting, the board, through the budget, they had set aside $40,000 to do the videoing and the work on the sewer lines. And so that's the money we're using. So I'm just requesting that we're going to get a guy to come in and patch up the fence. We eventually need to replace it, but the patching is be somewhere around $3,000 to $6,000, depending on how many pipe fence posts we have to fix and how much wire and everything. So it's just a mending job. We're going to spend probably $7,000, $8,000, maybe $10,000 getting trees cleaned out, grubbing all the sagebrush out of the sewer lagoons. There's not supposed to be anything in there. It's been let grow for too long. Pulling all the rocks out, cleaning, getting it all cleaned up so it looks nice and well maintained. So we're doing that. The engineers have been checking elevations, turnouts, making sure the grades are all the same, stability of slopes, checking the sediments in the ponds, and the clay layers. So we've been working on that. That's really using some of that, as well as some of the money from the bonds or the impact fees, which is allowed in order to get those to a condition where everybody else in the world can continue to use them. So we're doing that. But the other place I would request is some money for the camera or the videoing. That's part of this $40,000 that was set aside. And we're using ProPipe. They've been doing our work the last few years, and they're just helping us go throughout the system and do all the videoing and cleaning and verifying its integrity, so we know if we have to replace or rebuild or anything else. Again,
so you're identifying the areas.
Yeah, videoing and cleaning and getting it ready, making sure anything needs to be fixed that we do it. Again, it's getting ready for these homes that are more and more coming on board, that we have capacity and integrity to the system, and it's ready to go.
I compliment you on being proactive, so we don't have to be reactive.
That's great. I don't want to be that, especially the sewer system.
Yeah.
and sometime in the very near future, too, we want to try and install a couple of generators down in the preserve area. That scares me to death. I guess you've had some spills, power outages, and so we need to prevent that. So that'll be, of course, we'll spend quite a bit of money on those, $50,000 probably. But we'll do those, try and get that budget for next year. But if the board's okay with those expenditures, get the survey and the engineering and the line cleaning and everything, part of it's to prepare for the new growth. And part of it is just maintenance, just getting it cleaned up and well maintained and surveyed and all that stuff.
I think we can do this, board members, by consensus and not by a vote. Isn't that right?
Correct.
So thank you, Blake. Comments from trustees?
Just to clarify, all the work you're requesting is within the $40,000 budget. We're not looking for an expansion budget.
No, we'll stay under that. And again, we just are using guys, that locals, people that's helped us, that'll come up and just do work as we need it. It's not like some big major contract or anything. It's just cleaning and, using a guy with a backhoe or a hydro unit or something for a few minutes, somebody at the road grader to do a little work here, and if somebody a fence repairman to do that. Yeah. But it's all maintenance and getting the integrity of the system identified.
Okay. Trustees, any other comments pertaining to the monies being spent for cammering and cleaning out the sewer?
Sounds like a good idea to me. What's the scoop on, didn't we have to line the sewer by where the new well is?
Correct, and part of this camera work that we're going to be doing with ProPipe in the next week will be for that. So we'll video everything from that little measuring house up there on by sundown. We'll video from there, and then 1,000 feet past the well, And then they'll slip line that to protect or put in the curtain or whatever they're going to do to protect the well and meet the state's requirements. And then we'll probably move down to the, I don't know what that's called down there, the area going across the valley or the preserve, that big old flat area where the sewer line's at, or going out across that hillside. We'll probably concentrate on that next and then save the mountain where that work will actually be better probably in the spring right after ski season's over. Probably less dangerous. We don't want to be up there anytime now. Construction is crazy, and then also it's just a more dangerous time to be on the hills on the mountain working. So we'll wait probably till spring. We'll probably do it all in phases. I don't think we'll get all of it done this year, but so we'll finish that next spring. Finish up on the survey of it.
Okay, but based upon the camera work so far, the area by the well is not leaking. We're not going to have an issue with contaminating the well in any way.
I haven't seen anything, and that's really based on meter readings from the top of the mountain down to the sewer lagoons. I haven't seen any change in flow quantities.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
By the time it gets all the way over, so I'm anticipating that we're not getting infiltration and we're not losing anything. I think we should be good, but that's the purpose of this video. And we'll do is we'll verify that. That's what we're about to do next week.
Okay.
Great. Super. Let's continue on.
Okay, and this is the area that Blake wanted to talk about the impact fees. There's been it's okay, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
Please.
There's been some concern by some of the folks in the district that in paying the new impact fees. There's been claims that they have paid them previously. And our problem is Carrie and I have looked through the records of the district and the minutes and everything else. It's been a number of years when the district was a private entity, PMI. Much of the business was done and much of the money was collected in those days. As you can see, we built a little bit of a history there and we have mountains of information, but it appears that much of the money in the beginning of the district was collected by a private company and ended up in private hands. And they still later on imposed impact fees even after that for everybody. I'm just going to get to the bottom line, and that is that there's been a number of times when they've had impact fees and connection fees. Whether they've actually been connection fees or impact fees is hard to tell, but it appears that again that they were collecting fees. It's difficult for us to tell as an entity where the money went. The record keeping is not that great. And so we don't have good verification that the district received it. There's a number of times when the developer, it appears, received the money, but they did not forward that on to the district. And we don't have records to prove anything different. So we've asked Blake to look at it. We have a number of people that are wanting to challenge us, especially in Sheep Creek area. They have records they've paid the developer for their connection or impact fees.
No, they call it a hookup fee.
Yeah, call it a hookup fee then, or connection fee?
Hookup fee. Hookup fee, and then they were to pay the district a connect or a non-connect fee. And that's, I mean, so I have done the research, and we're actually in a better position than we even thought. So under Utah law, there's a difference between what's called a hookup fee and an impact fee. And so they're completely separate fees. And so the agreement specifically calls it a hookup fee, and that's really helpful to us. Because a hookup fee, and this is actually, if you look at what the agreement says and lays out, is actually what they were paying for. A hookup fee is, quote, defined as a fee for the installation and inspection of any pipe, line, meter, or appurtenance, or to connect to a gas, water, sewer, storm, water, power, or other utility system of a local district or private entity. And if you look at this agreement that was in place specifically in the Sheep Creek area, what they were doing was they were paying the developer to put in the infrastructure, then the developer was supposed to pay the district, and there's no record showing that the developer actually paid the district. There is some indication that there may have been some money paid to Powder Mountain Inc., which was not the district, but then the district would take over the pipelines, and basically what was the district's obligations were to inspect and make sure that these pipelines and this infrastructure was being put in adequately. And so these owners, the purchasers, were paying $6,500, And a lot of them were doing it in their closing documents. They were, and there were some that never actually made the payments. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that was a separate and completely distinct fee than what an impact fee is. Okay? Because that money was being paid to the developer to put in these pipelines. Impact fees are defined under the statute as a payment of money imposed upon new development activity as a condition of development approval to mitigate the impact of a new development on public infrastructure. And impact fees are specifically, you need to know as a district what your impact is going to be on your district by the development. Meaning, we had no idea, they were just being charged flatly $6,500 a lot. And so we had no idea what impact it was going to ultimately have on our district, and we still don't know until they come to us and say, hey, we're gonna build a house and we're gonna put in a pool, or hey, we're gonna have this is actually gonna be, you know, a farm or whatever it may be. But the bottom line is we don't know what the impact of these lots are going to be until they're ready to be developed. And so they're completely separate fees. There was another fee that was also discussed in these agreements, and it was called a connect or non-connect fee that was supposed to be paid to the district. And I don't know, from the documents I received, whether it was actually being paid or not. But that connect or non-connect fee is what we are now calling a standby fee, which is pretty clear in the...
So those things, those terms can be unilaterally used?
They can be unilaterally used. But hookup fee is a specifically defined under Utah law term. And because that was the term used in the agreement, I'm confident that was, and if you look at again at the agreement, it was for the developer to put in this infrastructure, which is what a hookup fee really is.
Those people basically,
they paid their hookup fee, and he put in the infrastructure, and those lots now have that infrastructure in there.
But doesn't have anything to do with a standby fee.
It has nothing to do with a standby fee, and it has nothing to do with an impact fee. Standby fees and impact fees are to be paid to the district. So when they're ready to connect, when they're ready to develop their land and tell us what their plans are for the property, what kind of, you know, the house they're putting in, whether they're going to have a pool or not, we have the engineering that's done under our impact fee study, and we can tell them what their impact fee will be. They pay that to the district at that point in time.
And what's the subdivisions we're talking about?
These are Sheep Creek. It's down by the preserve. Do you know where that's at?
I do. I hear that's a dumpy neighborhood.
I won't answer that. I'd live there.
Okay. So Mark does too, I believe. Yeah.
So I can put together, if it would be helpful to you, Carrie, I can put together another little handout. Like we have a handout regarding the standby fees. So when people ask the question, I could put it together, a little handout talking about these. The difference between an impact fee and a hookup fee, because they are clearly
a little just one page, just a little
one page, just
bullet points, boom, kind of.
Yep.
That's great.
Amen. I'm tired of fighting with people.
There's also related to this is the Powder West area, phases 1, 2, and
three and four,
and then Powder 11. Looking back at the history of that, I don't know, Blake, if you got in the middle of it in any way.
No, because we basically pulled it up.
Again, that one, it appears that there was arrangement made with Mr. Kobabe and a gentleman of two or three lots. Again, that was a private development to start with. and over time, they've actually imposed impact fees. The old connection fee that he had charged, he didn't send the same thing. He just said, here's my connection fee for you to hook up. And at some point when they started with impact fees, then he went back to the people and said, it's your benefit to be a part of the system, and you're all going to start paying $4,000, I think.
$4,000 additional.
In addition
because now
to
your
what
lot
they
is
paid,
worth more.
Saying you need to pay the impact fee. So it was understood by, sounds like to me, anybody who was around at that time that there was going to be an impact fee that was charged. Now, a number of the homes got connected without paying that, and I don't know how that all went down or anything, but...
Because they were under the same impression that the preserve was.
Oh, they thought it was paid for.
Already paid for.
So, most everybody, or a big share of homes up there, got in without paying an impact fee, or I guess what we'd consider an impact fee. And it's, again, but the statute of limitations is difficult for us to go back and charge them an impact fee at this point. It's probably too late to even worry about it. They've been paying their standby fees. So I guess we just determine, we need to decide what we're going to do with that. We've got, of course, Mike had a connection. I guess yours was picked up after
a bankruptcy.
After bankruptcy, and then
no, mine was picked up because he hadn't paid. Bruce Edwards hadn't paid in 20 years his standby fees, so he lost his hookup.
He lost his hookup because of a bankruptcy.
And then Gary, you paid a standby. You paid an impact fee, right? And then also Bob did. So we need to decide what we're going to do with those. How do we treat them truthfully? I guess Bob and I don't think Gary would, but they would fall into the same situation as the rest of the people. They end up getting, should have had their impact fees. They paid them, but everybody else got them for free.
And they were collected after the house was built.
So if houses have already been built, structures have already been built, my recommendation would be that you don't try to go back and charge, because I think legally you'd be in trouble.
So both trustees did that, and I don't know if Mike did the same thing, but they paid just to not get in trouble, keep the district happy, and try and do the right thing. But their house was already in built, and they just came in and paid the fees to be honorable.
But any lot that hasn't been built on, they still have to pay the impact.
They still have to pay the impact fee, right?
Unless they can show that they actually paid an impact fee, and again, that's different than a hookup fee.
Also, I need to have you, Blake, speak to the fact, because I'm just going to bring this to the forefront. Speak to the fact now that we could have a potential conflict of interest with the majority of the board. And so normally you would.
So if there's ever an issue with respect to a conflict of interest, and I think this has already been discussed during that training that you had from LeGrand. I don't know how much he talked about it because I came in kind of partway through his presentation. But if there's a conflict,
he talked a lot about it.
Yeah, I caught the fact that he had talked for a long time as made a comment.
It was only like 190 minutes.
He's making sure you knew.
But the bottom line is this: if you have an issue where you recognize that you're going to have a conflict, you have an obligation as a trustee to bring that to our attention, and then you need to recuse yourself from the discussion and voting on those issues.
Before we carry on any more discussion on this, let me just bring the light. Based on the bylaws for candidacy for this board, we now have a full board here present, two on the phone, three here, five members, but potentially speaking, unless I'm wrong, the majority of the board could have to recuse themselves, which makes us, now we don't have a majority, so we don't have enough to vote.
You have a quorum. Yeah,
I'm not in the same position as Bob and Gary.
Okay, am I missing something? Because I thought yours just didn't take place. I know you're not in the same position, but you have a property that the fee was paid or wasn't paid.
But
could there be a potential conflict of interest?
I don't believe so for me, because mine was paid because it was lost in court. There was a court ruling that took mine away.
Oh.
So
you paid and everything is...
So he paid as if it were a brand new lot.
The lot that I bought in bankruptcy.
Yeah, and so did Bob and I. We all paid.
No, but in my case, Gary, I paid because the previous owner had lost his impact fee or hookup fee, supposedly by not paying standby fees for 20 plus years.
Oh, okay.
So the difference is that you and Bob had your house built, and then you just came in because you felt it was the right thing to do and paid your impact fees, even though you probably didn't have to.
I
nobody else did.
Okay, because we were told we had to by the district.
And everybody was.
So we may have been wrong. That's why I'm bringing it up, is we need to address it and decide what we're going to do.
So I just wanted to bring that to the forefront, because I want to make sure that we don't have anybody else coming after us after if they were to pull the open meetings law and have a problem with that. That being said, I I trust everyone on this board to be upfront and to be forthright. This, where this has a personal effect, it concerns me as a party, only to the fact that we have people with personal interest on this. But again, will you restate? I'd like you to restate your position as with regards to the direction you, as legal counsel, would have us go, as it relates to this particular issue.
So with impact fees, you now have a study that's been completed, and you have a new impact fee that you have now set. Moving forward, anyone that has a lot that doesn't have any kind of building on it and can't show that they paid an impact fee, they should have to pay the impact fee. If they already have a connection and they have a building on there, and I use that, and I'm trying to make sure it's clear that there's already, the connection is on. Water, sewer is going to that infrastructure that's on the lot. Then I think you would be in a difficult position to go and ask them to pay a new impact fee.
Do we know what percentage of people in the district with existing structures paid an impact fee versus those that didn't?
From what I know, nobody.
About Powder West, wasn't there some?
Powder 11. Now, Powder 11 shows, I have a check, and once again, we got it. I have a check that shows, and information that shows that the sewer was supposedly paid for $6,500, but then again, it might be under connection fee, and that's what I think it's under, is connection fee, and then under one lot, one particular lot, I won't name the person, but it shows in their title work, it shows that they paid the water for $5,500, and it just shows water and sewer connections as being paid through the title. So there's those five lots on Powder 11 that I can show that were supposedly paid sewer only, and then the rest of it came through the title. So basically, but it still shows, once again, connection. So that's why we were trying to figure out, you know, where do we stand? And those are existing homes. The rest of them aren't, but those are existing homes.
So are we using connection and pickup to mean the same thing?
That's what it was supposed to have been, yes.
In the past, but I think moving forward, you want to make sure you're using terms clearly. You have a connect fee or a standby fee that you charge. You have a
hookup fee.
You have a, well, I don't think the district has been charging
hookup fees. No.
Not like that, no, but we do, yeah, so we did implement one.
Back in 2005, they were.
Yeah.
But you're just keeping these terms straight, and that's why I can send you a sheet that has kind of the definition. And the reason why I say what I say about impact fees is if you look at the definition, again, it's defined as a payment of money imposed upon new development activity as a condition of development approval to mitigate the impact of the new development on public infrastructure. So it's hinging on that term, new development. Now, if you have an existing structure and they come to you, or they pull a permit and they're going to add on to that structure, the development activity is actually defined under the statute, which means any construction or expansion of a building, structure, or use, any change in use of a building or structure, or any changes in the use of the land that creates additional demand and need for public facilities. So if it's been it's not been habitated, no one's been living there, and you've got, all of a sudden they're going to move in and they want to put an expansion on and put a pool in, that's new development, and then you can charge an impact.
Okay.
So do we decide what we're doing on these other two trustees' impact fees, where they paid them after they were... they were already in, the house was built, and they were using the water.
I mean, when are we talking about? When did they pay you?
What, a year and a half ago? 2 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. I think maybe only, yeah, I don't remember.
It was about a year ago.
I think it was
ago.
Yeah.
In my mind, they almost would, I'm not doing this because they're trustees, I'm just saying honesty, they did that just to be, felt like they were doing the right thing, but the truth is their home was very similar to everybody else's. It didn't pay the fees. They were all in. We can't go back and charge anybody now. They would have been treated the same. So do we reimburse them, or do we just let them be nice and pay it, or what do we do so that we resolve this one way or the other?
Yeah, I wouldn't be making, I mean, I don't know how many more there are besides the trustees, but I wouldn't be making any, like, hey, you paid this and you didn't need to pay this, so we're going to return and refund the money. I mean, the money's already been paid. It's already been used. I'm talking about moving forward from
right,
here.
Right, but are you opening, I mean, is it just the two trustees that did it?
I don't know.
As my records show, well, since I started in 2016, it is just the two. I've collected on other lots that were not, that, you know, that had new structure going
right.
up, but that had already existing, it's Bob and Gary.
I just want to make sure we're fair to all, and if they're the two, I mean, that's a different, to me, it's a different, it could be a different outcome, but I certainly want to be fair to those. I want to be fair to all, though. That's really important to me. I don't want to.
But
we have the responsibility of running a business, but I want to be fair.
But you sent notice to everybody, and these were the only two.
We didn't send out notice.
Oh.
It was a conversation we had in board meeting.
But this was prior to Gary being on the board.
This was prior to Gary being on the board.
How did Gary find out about it?
Bob.
Oh. So Bob, you strong-armed Gary into it.
He might have paid money. He
did.
Need to.
Yeah, he did. He's extraordinarily loquacious.
Yeah.
On this matter, there's a moot button. For
yeah.
I just wanted to resolve it. I hate to create a problem, but I again, it's just one of those weird little things that are out there that it's just better if the board decides something, we move on and forget about it all or whatever. It's fine with us, whichever way you
choose. Legally, doesn't that open us up to a claim, I mean, from these two, that if we were charging them a fee that wasn't assessed to anybody else, it was in the same situation? I mean, selective taxation.
If they make a request for, hey, you believe you've overbilled me, I think they're probably within the statute of limitations to make that request, and as your counsel, I'd probably advise you to pay that back.
Right.
But I'm talking about moving forward. I
sure.
mean, and,
right.
and I'm talking about, you don't go out, you don't need to, there's no reason or need to go solicit, hey.
Yeah.
No. And there never was.
Yeah.
There never was.
But going forward, if we use these new fees and everybody pays, it's new development.
Right.
It's just forget about the past.
Impact fee is specifically tied to development. So,
how much are we talking? We're talking
$11.5 apiece.
$11.5 apiece.
So you're talking the 20, what, 23?
So here's where I do think that if you're going to make a vote on this, then I think
they have to recuse themselves.
They would have to.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But we don't have a quorum, then, do we?
Oh, you would have
three.
Okay, that's right.
You do have three.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm usually doing my emails on these calls anyway, so I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
Hear no evil, see no evil.
Trustee Barrett, do you have any comment?
Well, as a trustee, I have a clear-cut obligation to recuse myself from voting and participating in discussions. But as a customer, if it's appropriate,
please,
I can tell you that it was clear at the time that the district was beginning to assess impact fees to construction. We were developing a fee schedule that relates to people who had who were intending to build and who wanted to understand their costs. And it became evident that I did not pay at that time. And similarly, Gary, who was in new construction, had not paid either. And that's how the thought process generated to charge both myself and Gary. And with this new information coming to light, I recused myself, and I'll defer to the decision of a non-conflicted board. That's all I can say.
So this discussion took place in 2017?
I think it was last year.
And Gary,
exactly.
You built
16.
In 2013.
You built in 20, and Bob, when did you build?
14.
2012.
My mindset is they built prior to the discussion would have yielded the same result as the discussion we're having now with the advice of legal counsel, that anything that's standing we wouldn't assess, and anything that is new construction going forward would be assessed the fee. I would say ethically we owe them money. That's my position. I don't know where everyone else is.
Trustee Moyal, any comments?
Bob tried to suggest that I owed the money, and I fought it. I fought it, I did my own research, and found out I owed the money separately to why they paid it. So I paid it for my reasons. Because I knew it had been lost. And I got that information from Alita Colley.
But you built after these discussions, right? Because you were in 16 that you built?
I built in 16.
Okay.
Trustees, I'll entertain a motion.
I built in 15. But still, I paid for different reasons.
Right.
If you're looking to me, I...
I'm just looking that way, okay. So I don't have eye contact with the other two. Sorry, let me go like this.
Well, ultimately, this is your decision to make. I mean, I've given you the legal advice that I think is appropriate. And I want to assist you in this, but this district has to move forward in a more professional manner. It has just been... looking through these documents, even just doing this analysis about hookup and impact fee, was just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's not so.
Budgetarily, what does that do to us?
We're okay. So, if it was recommended that they could do something, would they need to make petition then or request reimbursement? Is that what would have to happen if the board authorized it? So we'd have to wait for them to ask for it back. Or did the board just say, let's just do it and forget about it, move on? Oh, okay. Just need to make sure
it's the process. I'm sorry, but if we owe them money, then we shouldn't ought to encumber them to message us, hey, you owe us money, and make it be the onus be on them. We need to have integrity as a board, have integrity as an organization, and this is how you do that. I don't have a motion to. Those are just my feelings.
Can I make a motion, or how does that work? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I motion that Powder Mountain West residents Gary Erdang and Bob Barrent are reimbursed their fees.
I second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Is there any discussion? No discussion being heard. I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So by the majority of those who haven't recused themselves, the motion carries unanimously. Very good. We'll move on. Thank you, board members. Let's move on.
Okay.
Mr. Watts.
Next item is the Kobe Waterline proposal. You have in your pack a proposal from CRS Engineers. They've been doing some work for us in order to get to a point where we could actually design a project. I know there's been some discussion from the board members about hiring someone else to maybe do additional work. But this is a proposal sent to us by CRS to get the Kobe well waterline and booster stations designed and ready for construction. And of course, this is something we'll need in order to get funding. So we'll have to get a bond issue done for this particular project. And so we need this information, as well as we'll need the design and all the engineering work done. There's a piece in here that is looking at this. If you talk to the chairman and the vice chair about the possibility of the district doing some of this work, and there's no question that if we had the right employee, and I'm suggesting maybe looking for that right employee, we could pull back at least the $100,000 and use that money to cover this employee that would have the skill set for the project management, the inspection, And also would have some engineering background and everything, but that we could pull that in. There's one more, Carrie. Do you remember which one? Number 8?
Task 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm. 6, 7, and 8?
No, just those two.
Oh, it's, yeah. So anyway, with that and some other work, we could probably get the right employee. We could actually help fund that employee over the next couple of years doing the work that's here and not have to pay it out to a consulting engineer. And then there'll be inspections that we probably would bill Summit that we normally pay CRS that would help to cover their work. And then we'll be doing work on the sewer system, probably have some type of a bond or something to cover those improvements someday. We could do the same thing with that. But anyway, I just need to know what the board's feeling is or opinion on this proposal to use CRS to get the water line and the well, everything developed and engineered and designed. And to use their staff for some project management and all the other things you see in here. Comfortable with that? Do you want us to look for somebody else? What's your opinion?
My thought is we should at least get a competitive bid from somebody else. I like the idea because that was the one thing that jumped out at me too.
Yeah.
The bulk of it being.
I mean, my feeling is that we do need a competitive bid. And I think it's important to always keep in mind the distinction between our district engineer and the firm that he's involved with. I think as our engineer, he is responsive to our financial and fiduciary needs and should be in a position to reflexively obtain the best price for us and help us identify ways we can internally do stuff. And I want to make sure that we're on safe ground as it relates to the simple fact that CRS is a firm that he's intimately involved with. And so to not get competitive bids, in my mind, puts us at risk.
That's good. That's part of the reason we had our attorney look at the professional services statute also, just in case that was your opinion.
I'm just a tiny bit confused. You were asking whether we should hire someone to do some of this work. Right, that's the question, or
it is to what? It is to have somebody actually do the engineering work and the project management and everything else that's included
right.
in this proposal,
and actually an full time employee on our payroll.
We would. Correct? I'm suggesting at some point we need to hire that person. They wouldn't do everything that's in here. That's a lot of this work is for a consultant, but there are pieces of this. At least for sure, task number 7, that we could have the right employee who could do that and keep that money within the district.
Yeah, I think until we get a competitive bid to see what someone else is going to charge from a construction management fee standpoint, I think we're premature looking at hiring an employee. But that did jump out at me is if there's ongoing need for that, there may be cost savings to be realized bringing a full-time employee on. Basically
I got it. You guys have the updated packet, don't you?
Gary, it's in your email.
Oh, it is? You sent
yeah, it?
Is. All right. I don't think I got it before we started, but
yeah,
I will fire it up.
If that's what the board's recommendation is, get those competitive bids from other engineering companies, we'll do it.
I'm comfortable with this. Always the second. Okay. I always like 2 or 3 different options, and so that's good.
Okay. That's what we'll do. Probably be a good just have a motion in fact to go out and solicit the professional services to do this and bring that back to the board. Probably good to have a motion for that effect. It's going to cost some money.
If that helps you, I'll entertain a motion. I don't know that we necessarily need to have a motion on that particular from a legal standpoint, do we?
I don't think.
But it might be a good form. If you're comfortable with that,
I feel better if you do. Just give me direction that you want me to go get different engineers to look at.
Trustees, if you would, one of you would entertain a motion to that effect.
So I'll make the motion that we solicit bids from a minimum of 2 engineering firms for the Kobe Waterline proposal.
I have a motion.
A second.
And a second by Trustee Erdang. Is there any other discussion? None being heard, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you very much. Let's move on. Trustee Roy. Sorry,
hey,
Manager Watts.
So item number eight, there's an addendum to our standards. The district is now installing these thermal couplings. As you can see in your details, it's the meter box. It's now about almost 6 feet deep, 5 feet deep. And that's to prevent freezing and yet still have the meter. In the past, the district has put some of the meters inside people's homes. I guess Powder West has a lot of that. But this is another way to do it, which allows the district to have access to the meters and the control at the valve out on the property. So this is a new standard that we've implemented for going forward for all of the existing lots. We'll require them to install this type of a meter box and meter setup as they come in to sign up for water. And then for the developer, that'll be something that'll be installed as a part of the needed infrastructure to go in. We also, along with that, and I, it's a separate part for the fees. This is in addition to it, and we probably, if the board's comfortable with that, it's what we were suggesting and what the engineers have reviewed, and we suggest that be implemented into our standards and specifications.
The one question I had about this was, This is going to be located adjacent to the home?
It'll be just inside of the property line or just past the valve, past the curb.
So not so much down in the valley, but up on the mountain, I think you may, but you're going to have a difficult time accessing the meter in the wintertime.
Yeah, so these have a radial read.
But if you had to get in and actually turn off a valve or service
too much snow.
Yeah, especially if it's within the snow throw area of snow removal. I mean, it could be under six ice. To 8 feet mm-hmm. of ice.
Yeah.
So, just something to consider. That
it's a great point.
You may want to look at kind of locating it closer to the home where it's not going to be compacted snow. It'd be easier to dig. Or
how about the setback? So, those are the PREDs have like a 10-foot setback.
Right.
Isn't that going to affect anything?
Trying to think what we've done. What did we do on Orr's project? His are just right by the curb almost.
I believe so.
That's the only way we could do it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing would be to put them in the road. But, you'd almost have to do that at the time of put the vaults in at the time of road construction so you're not coming back after the fact and digging up the road for each one of the connections. But then you know you're snow free.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I'm going to be up there with the engineer tomorrow.
Yeah.
So maybe we're going to look at the lift stations. Maybe we'll go look at that.
Check with the electrical. The electrical they had an issue with, didn't they? They put them in too far into the footprint of the house. Cash Electric.
Cash Valley Electric.
And then the driveways are going to occupy half of that frontage.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So when you have a driveway, electrical, and a 60-inch box, there's not much room.
Yeah.
Now you could double up the, put them in the common area.
We've got a couple of them, like Bisno's property up there. For some reason, the valve is like clear over to the side of his property coming in, and maybe we just keep them off to one side somewhere. Most of those are in, but we may have to look at each one of the phases now going forward.
Could you do a shared box, like they could share two meters?
Yeah, I think you could.
Or something?
Yep. Yeah, that might be a way to go. We'll take a look at those and see where they're all at. But yeah, that's a good comment. I appreciate that.
Very good. Any other comments on this particular item? Let's move on then, Roy.
Okay, and then there's also fees related to that. They are more expensive to install for everybody that does not have a meter box. They will have to pay this hookup fee, and these are the ones that Blake talked about. This is a cost for the meter box as well as the meter, and then an inspection, and then the installation of the materials. That is the meter box right there on the bottom. These we need to have approved, I believe. I think that we can make the addendum on it.
No, it's all an addendum.
Okay. But anyway, that's the effect that they will have for anybody that's hooking up in a subdivision where the infrastructure is already there, and they just come in and they sign up for water, and we have to go actually put that meter box in. Again, going forward, all of the newer stuff will have this installed as part of the infrastructure for the new lots. But these are the hookup costs that they'll have to pay. And now they could use our contractor to pay for some of the construction costs. Right now we're been using Greg Chambers to install those. But if they had their own tractor there or whatever, and as long as we're there inspecting it, they could actually install it. They did that up there on Powder West just the other day. Somebody installed them. And then he bought the materials.
He bought the materials. The only thing he has to worry about now is the meter.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what these are, new fees and stuff that go along with that. The fees and the schedule, and then of course this other sheet showing the different sizes of the meters that go in. So as people hook up, that'll be their costs in addition to their impact fees.
Okay, trustees, any comments?
Roy, as it relates to, if these fees come into play, would it affect a house that's in construction in Powder West right now?
Yes, it did. That house that's there that's just getting finished?
Yeah.
He actually had to pay for this. He provided his own construction, but they could go and acquire the materials also, but it's a wash. But they do need to pay the inspection. But yes, these do apply to all of the new homes going in up there.
Right, as would the impact fees, presumably.
As would the impact fees, correct. Yep, this is in addition to the impact fees.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, and number 10, I was hoping maybe we'd have some information from Summit concerning the annexation. I know that they're still working on that with their engineers. So they're about ready to annex some land for these two developments. There's two things that we'll probably do. There's two ways of actually annexing. If they come to us with a petition, the board would look at the petition, set up the public hearings, and go through that whole process, and the expense of it is about $1,200, $1,500, probably legal costs involved in it. And then the board would act in the public hearing to annex the land. They also, since it's one parcel owned by one individual, they could, I think Blake, maybe if you would maybe help with the annexation laws, seems like if somebody, if the district can choose to bring a piece of property in the district and not even have to go through the public hearing process.
There's still a public hearing that has to take place, but there's different requirements depending on how you want to do it. So, and I have gone through that, and I've prepared a little memo, and I can get that to you now, or can I tell you what the...
Yeah, I was thinking that one of them, we didn't have to actually do the public hearing. One of them, we did, the petition, but the other one, where we're just bringing it in, I was thinking we could just do it with a board motion. It was a simpler process. But anyway, whatever that process is, again, they're getting ready for that annexation, and that'll be coming up in the next little while, and I think we'll meet on that in the next day or so also. Yep. We'll talk about needs of the developer. So that annexation will be happening. And then the last item, you remember when LeGrand was here, he was talking about the important training that trustees all need. Coming up in November, it's mandatory. Our chairman doesn't have to go because he's a commissioner and they have other training that does the same thing. So, but you can go if you'd like to.
Excuse me, just a moment. Okay, I'm done.
We'd love to have you be there.
Yeah.
Might share dinner
anyway,
with you.
Right?
Yeah. But all the other trustees need to go. The state actually called Carrie and wondered why we hadn't had you there before. So it's a requirement. So we wanted to tell you that so that you make sure that you block out those days and plan on being at the training. It's not online. It has to be in attendance. Okay. It's going to be Davis County Conference Center.
I will tell you, Bob took his training last year because you have to do one train within a year of you coming on. Okay. So this is the training. Bob did his last year. It's good for 4 years. So the only training that Bob has to do is the first day, which is open acts meeting. And that has to be done once a year, period, for everybody. So in all honesty, he only has to come and do the one day. The rest of you have to do three. So I will get you registered for that. But those are the dates. So just kind of keep those in mind. All and right. There is a certificate at the end when you take your test. And I have to submit that to the state. So just make sure you get
so
it to me.
So there's a test involved?
Yes,
too.
There is.
Yeah.
Bob took the test. And I have to submit the test. I have to submit the certificate to the state. So just make sure I get
but
it.
But it's a blood test.
It's a so blood test, yeah. Sign it in blood.
Okay. Anyway, okay,
that's that covers that then on the item number 11.
Anything else? Any questions for our manager, trustees? None being heard, then we'll move on to item F on our agenda, which is the treasurer's report.
Okay, you're going to see, I'll just real quick. PTIF account has $267,412 in it. All three of the bank accounts have one. Your general funds account has $80,000 in it. The impact account has $39,000 in it, and the bond account has $20,000 in it. I got a call the other day from Ben Merritt on the bond, and they are reimbursing us an extra $46,000 because we overpaid. So I'm waiting for that to come in.
Yay.
Yeah, that's what I said too. So we will be getting an extra $46,000 back for the overpayment on that. Now, this budgets versus actuals is finally done. It's a little lengthy, but I left it this way just so you can see how we've done the chart of accounts for right now. And then next month, it'll be two pages. We'll take half of this out. But we redid the chart of accounts, which basically kind of tells you how we've set it up, where your income is coming in and where it's actually coming from versus just a straight income. So you can kind of get an idea of how I've got it laid out, where we're getting our expenses, kind of where they're at for the expenses, and then if you've got any questions, just let me know, but it's finally done. We're up and online. Gary, what we have done with Amy, who is from Christensen Palmer, she's our auditor.
Uh-huh.
She's been downstairs every day working with us to get everything done and in place. Now we have the desktop done. And what we have done instead of, because we've actually physically purchased three desktops, we're going to refund two of them. The reason being is I got Steve, who is our IT guy, to actually set up, and he's got to set you up too, and actually he can set any one of the rest of you guys up, to where you can log in, and you'll have your own login onto QuickBooks, but you can do it from your computer without happening to have the QuickBooks, because we can do it as a multi-user on one. So we're going to be getting the reimbursement for the other two that we purchased, which will give us back $400. And then I've got to get with you so he can send you the link and get you all set up. And then we would like to actually just kind of continue to have Amy do the reconciliation with you as an overview, because she's not only reconciling the bank account, she's reconciling everything. And then at the end of the year, she is the one that will be doing the financials, and she can just whip them up. But she's got access from her desk, and I'll get with you to let you know, how that works. And we'll get Steve on, and anybody else that wants to get on and view it, all I got to do is send you a link, and then you can come on and look at all anytime you want.
Okay,
instead of
perfect.
Having all the different desktops at once. So I'll get with you on that. Is that all right?
Okay. Yeah, perfect.
Okay. I went and released just a little while ago. I released a lien place two. We're finally getting down to where there's only, I think, five of our customers who are just blatantly refusing to pay. Other than that, we have collected on everything.
Congratulations, that's
so
great work.
That's great.
What do we do with the five customers? What's your recommendation?
They've got liens on them. Oh, that's something else that we implemented too, was I went in, and we're gonna place this on every single property. I've had quite a couple of people sell property up in, like, the Preserve, and when they run a title search, it doesn't have anything on the title as far as utilities go. And so anybody that's basic, any title company that's basically does not do a lot of work up on the mountain does not know that there is a separation, especially in the Preserve, of Liberty Pipeline water, you know. So they call one and think that it's all in one. And then 4 or 5 months later, after I have to go place a lien, I finally get a nasty note from the person who sold it that says, hey, I sold my lot and I did not know. So what I did was I took over a stack about this thick to the recorder's office, and we are putting on each and every parcel an ongoing assessment, which means when they run the title, it says, you call me. And then there's no money or anything allowed. It just states that, hey, you need to call this utility company because there's a reason. And then that way they call us, and there's nobody that slips through the cracks for 6 months. So we've got that in place also, but yeah. The recommendation on those five is I have sent letters. I've sent certified letters. They've signed them. They just honestly refuse to pay. And until there is liens, so if they go to sell the property, they're automatically going to call me. We will get our money eventually, but statute of limitations, we don't have to.
There's no,
not on that. That's what I'm saying, is it can be an ongoing thing until they're ready to do whatever. And I mean, it will $10,000 out the door if they want it, but we'll eventually get our money.
Well, can we get if we have to do this, and in as much as they're refusing to pay, I think the legal term for it is we can collect a fee in addition to the not just the fees that they own us, but can't we also establish a liquidated damage fee? That's the word I want. A liquidated damage fee, because we have staff time. I would like to bring that up, or we can put that.
I don't know if you'd call it a liquidated damage fee, but maybe a collection fee?
That's in the county, that's what we call it, is a liquidated damage fee for people who refuse to pay, or that's the word, the legalese. So if we could maybe look that up and even put that on the calendar, because for people who have to go to the point where we have to lien their property, it'd be okay with me if there were some liquidated damage fee. Ours is $300. And that's what they came up with on the second floor. So I don't like people giving me the bird.
Right. Well, we do impose.
Unless it's a turkey.
We do impose the $100. It's a $120 fee when the lien is actually placed, which is basically $20 for my time and a $100 fee because we placed the lien. So, I mean, is there anything above and beyond that as far as liquidated damage?
So Trustee Harvey is correct that you can, if you lien property and you're waiting and you're trying to collect, there is a way, whether you call it a liquidated damage fee, is that what they're calling it?
That's what we call it.
Okay, the county's calling it a liquidated damage fee, but you can add any type of staff charges or collection fees that you are required to actually collect that fee or impose that lien.
Okay, so in other words, if we impose that fee, we still have to go and put it through public hearing because it's another fee we're imposing. Am I right on that?
Public hearing with respect to the lot
of another fee, no, of another fee and imposing of another fee that
part
we do
of
not
our
have.
Fee ordinance.
Yeah, yeah.
So
make that part of your fee ordinance. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, we'll look into that.
$120 of money.
We're not talking about hardly any money here, but
yep.
we're spending time right now.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, Bob.
Yeah, Blake, I think we spoke about this at a previous meeting, but by refusing to pay fees, and these are typically standby fees, does that in fact constitute an abandonment of the connection, and can we simply notify these people that the property that they own, that they're refusing to pay on, loses its connection, therefore essentially becoming worthless, or they would have to come back to the district as single lot developers potentially and deal with capacity issues, development protocols, all that sort of stuff.
Yes,
isn't that ultimately where we want to go with this?
Yes, we already have a letter actually that Carrie and I have worked on putting together where we say that.
Yeah.
We actually say that in the letter when we actually lien the property.
Well, that's what does the board need to do to help you move that forward? Is that a policy that needs to be adopted? I mean, that's what makes sense to me.
I think that letter is actually being used by Carrie right now. She ran it through me.
Okay.
I don't think there was any board action needed, but yes, and we had already discussed it as a board. I presented that to you. We actually have a letter that we send when we lien the property. Carrie sends when she liens the property that actually has that language in it, talking about your failure to pay the standby fees and the fact we've had to lien this. You've waived any rights that your payment of your standby fees gave you.
You guys mail these certified mail, make sure that they're actually getting the
good point.
Yeah, that's what you said, right?
Yes.
But I think
what
Trustee Harvey's asking, I think, though, is can we charge an additional fee for staff time, Carrie's time?
Oh, sure, I get that. Yeah.
Absolutely, we can. We just have to have that as part of your fee schedule.
Let's put that on the agenda for next month's week. In as much as it's not posed right now as an action item, I'd like that to be either part of the manager's report or an action item or to something to amend the fees, and we get that done.
Okay. And I'll just get a copy of the letter, too.
You can do a little research, but $300 is what the county assesses for a liquidated damage fee.
Okay.
And maybe Blake to find out if just what that is. I mean, we've already spent enough time with that as it is right now that we're going to be out. That's another $1,500 if there's five left.
Help to cover the bills.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Zenger? Great. Then I will entertain a motion to adjourn the public meeting and go into a closed strategy session to discuss the acquisition of real property. of real property, including any form of water right and any pending or reasonable imminent litigation. Motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Hearing the motion, is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a seconded. Thank you. We are now adjourned and now we're